All right, welcome to Wednesday, July 6th, 2022. I'm Jason Page, the Don't Mind Me podcast, courtesy of Believe, B-L-E-A-V. You can watch us live. You can watch us live weekdays, Monday through Thursday, in fact, from 11 a.m. to 12 noon Eastern, and anytime on our Decibel 88 YouTube channel. A lot to get to over the next 60 minutes, or roughly thereabouts. I got some thoughts on overrated pitching dollars. I don't know why I got, how I got into this rabbit hole last night of looking up pitching statistics and what some guys or one particular guy is making. And I don't know why it just stuck with me, but it's something I want to talk about today on the show, and we'll do that coming up in a few minutes. I want to start the show with Novak Djokovic today. I know people say, really, you're starting with tennis? But Wimbledon's going on, and obviously I've been watching it. And look, I mean, outside of baseball right now, there's not a ton going on. The LIV Golf PGA Tour thing, which we'll get into. Billy Horschel had some interesting words for some of the guys that have joined LIV Golf, and not so much what they're saying about LIV Golf, but what they're saying in attacking the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour and all that. So we'll get into that a little later. But I want to start with Novak Djokovic, who's trying to make a run at another Wimbledon title. Of course, that will not be easy with one Rafa Nadal, who's also trying to win the third leg of the Grand Slam. Keep in mind, he's already won the first two. This is the most underreported story of the year, is Rafael Nadal, at his age, late 30s, making a push, what's he, 36? Making a push for a third straight major to start the year. Third straight Grand Slam. Which is just, it's mind-blowing. When you consider all the young talent that tennis has. And some people might say, well, it's an indictment on tennis that nobody's been able to overcome Rafael Nadal and Novak Djokovic at this point. These guys are still two guys that are head over heels better than anybody else on the tour or anybody else in tennis. There's an argument to be made for that. But maybe these guys are just that special a talent. But as it relates to Novak Djokovic, take nothing away from the, look, frankly, what I would call the stupidity of his decision not to get vaccinated. Whether you agree or disagree with his stance on that, or the way he handled the Australian Open flap, or any of that, say this for the guy. He's willing to put his entire legacy and standing in the sport, historically speaking, on the line for his beliefs, however dumb and ignorant they may be. And I've been one of the first people to kill him rhetorically for his decision to not get vaccinated and how he handled the Australian Open and not playing in that because he couldn't get a visa because he didn't get vaccinated. And this might be the only major we see him in over the next 11 months. Because as of now, I still don't think he's allowed to play the U.S. Open. He's not playing the Australian next year as of now. And he can't play the French. So this might be it for Novak Djokovic in the Grand Slam events. And this isn't a debate about him versus Rafa Nadal versus Roger Federer and who's the best. There's a lot of tennis geeks out there that could have that conversation. I'm talking about Novak Djokovic and putting him in perspective versus some of the other athletes we see today that have made the decision to not play or have been not allowed to play because of various COVID-related issues. This isn't the same as Kyrie Irving sitting out, being forced to sit out home games because he decided not to get vaccinated and the city of New York wouldn't allow it. This isn't the same as Kirk Cousins not getting vaccinated and having to miss a game as a result because he got infected, or Aaron Rodgers saying, "Oh, I'm immune or I'm vaccinated," and fooling everybody, and then the uproar over that. And the difference is simple. Maybe it's too simplistic, but those are team sports. If Kyrie Irving decides not to get vaccinated and makes that selfish decision, it's not only impacting him, it's impacting the other 12 guys or 11 guys on the Nets bench. It's impacting that entire organization, from the guys in the concession stands, because let's be honest, if Nets don't make a playoff run, that guy in the concession stands has 4, 5, 6 less games to work. The guy in the parking garage gets 4, 5, 6 less games to work. The usher bringing you to your seats. I'm not even just talking about the players and the money they lose round to round. I'm talking about everybody associated with that organization. If you work for the team and you have a bonus that's based on making it to a certain round of the playoffs, if you're an assistant coach, if you're a broadcaster, whatever. Everything that one person, Kyrie Irving, decides for himself now impacts you. Same thing for Aaron Rodgers, same thing for Kirk Cousins, Anthony Rizzo, played for the Yankees, another guy that didn't want to get vaccinated. I don't know if he ever did. You can go through the list on and on. Guys that didn't want to get vaccinated. Tanner Houck pitching for the Red Sox, who was supposed to be closing out games for them, couldn't make the trip to Toronto. If the Red Sox lose by one or two games this year and miss out on the postseason, right now I think they're one of the wild card teams, but let's just say they miss out. You can look back at those games where their bullpen blew it in a late game situation because Tanner Houck wasn't in Toronto to pitch because he couldn't go because he didn't get vaccinated. Doesn't just impact him. It impacts the other 25 men on the roster, 24 men on the roster, the managers. Guys get playoff shares. It impacts everybody. Novak Djokovic decides not to play or not to get vaccinated. You know who it impacts? Novak Djokovic. Not another person. You want to argue all the fans get cheated? Well, they know in advance if Novak's going to be playing an event. You now know the score. If Novak Djokovic decides not to play or can't play in a certain place, you know well enough in advance. The Australian Open was an outlier, but you knew he wasn't going to play the French. You know he's not playing the U.S. Open. If you go to the U.S. Open expecting to see Novak Djokovic, you're a moron because he's not going to be there. He's not going to be allowed. But think about that for a second. I remember working at the... I first came to Palm Springs in 2019 to cover the BNP Paribas Tennis Championships. And Novak Djokovic was in the event. And there was a guy who covers tennis. Might have worked for the Desert Sun, the newspaper out here. But he's a guy who's covered tennis and been around the game a while. A guy named Leighton. And Leighton and I were having this amazing debate about, is Novak the greatest of all time? He argues that he is. I argue that he isn't. And this was a few years ago, so the major count was obviously different. Roger Federer was still in the game, all of that. And just think about that for a second. That this guy has been willing, again, say nothing for whether he's right, wrong, dumb, smart. Maybe he's just smarter than all of us when it comes to the vaccine, whatever you want to argue. That this guy has decided to take his historical legacy, where he could stand in the overall scheme of the sport. I mean, think about Margaret Court, or don't, because she's an aberrant human being. But take nothing away from what she did on the tennis court as a player. She is still the record holder for most majors, singles. A mark that Serena Williams has been trying to get to, but for several years now hasn't been able to win that one more to tie it. Margaret Court. Think about the fact that that name stands the test of time in the sport of tennis on the women's side. Now it's Rafa Nadal, who still could add to his total. And how we recognize in this sport singles, majors, Grand Slam wins, whatever you want to call it, and the importance in the legacy of a player to that. People will talk about great players. Boris Becker, Yvonne Lendl, John McEnroe. Some of the greats, the all-time greats to play tennis. But the reverence with which we now speak of Rafa Nadal, or spoke of Roger Federer, or would speak of Novak Djokovic, that stands the test of time. And instead, Novak Djokovic has decided to put this stance, again, whatever you may think of it, ahead of all of those things. He spent his entire life, think about, again, close your eyes and just think about this for a second. He has spent his entire life, 80% of it, 90% of it, playing tennis competitively, all with the idea in mind of being the best ever. There are some athletes that just play for the money, the relative fame, the prize purses, you know, the checks, all that. There are certain guys that want to be the best ever. Federer, Nadal, Sampras, Agassi, Borg, all these guys that wanted to be the best ever. And Novak Djokovic was obviously one of those guys. And he's been willing to take the slings and arrows, as rightly as they may be aimed at him, and take that in substitute of potentially being the greatest ever. And people will want to debate, well, if he had played in the Australian, the French, the U.S. Open, he's going to miss the ones he may miss next year. If he had, he probably would have been the greatest of all time. But nobody will ever be able to call Novak Djokovic definitively the greatest of all time, because he will have been lacking that one mark, that one thing, for lack of a better word, that could prove the idea that he is the greatest of all time. And he's been willing to do that. And it doesn't impact, and it's so different to me because it doesn't impact anybody else. It doesn't impact a damn other player. It doesn't impact another teammate. It doesn't impact anything. Just him. That's one of the things that makes sports like golf and tennis so interesting and so different as opposed to some of the other sports we talk about on this show and this podcast, is the fact that it's just him. It's just you. It's remarkable. It really is. By the way, Novak Djokovic in his next match will face Cameron Norrie. He is an overwhelming favorite against the Brit. Rafa Nadal will take on the American, Taylor Fritz. How about an American? How about an American still being at Wimbledon at this stage of the game and not being home watching? Odds to win Wimbledon right now, Novak is at minus 358. He is the overwhelming favorite when you compare him to the players that remain. Nadal is plus 900. Nick Kyrgios is plus 900. Taylor Fritz is plus 1600. Cameron Norrie at plus 2500. Christian Garin at 20,000. Meaning if you wagered $100 on Christian Garin and he won Wimbledon, you would win 20 large. I mean, if you had $100, wouldn't you just throw it on him? You never know. Nadal is actually an underdog against Taylor Fritz. Interestingly enough. All right, enough tennis. Let me get into a thought on baseball. And I know Met fans are just going to go ballistic when I say what I'm about to say. And some people will say I'm overthinking it, smartest guy in the room stuff. But there's no way you could think about what I'm about to talk about logically and not agree with me. Glad you're with us on this Wednesday edition. Don't mind me. Stay with us. Good to have you with us back on this Wednesday edition. Don't mind me. I'm Jason Page. You got to hear what Billy Horschel had to say about some of his fellow professional golfers during a press conference on Tuesday. Boy, this LIV Golf PGA Tour thing is really getting ugly. Again, I use the word fractured the sport, but it really has, and there's just no getting around that. So I want to get into what I think is something that's kind of interesting. This idea of what pitchers are worth. One of my buddies who regularly watches and listens to the show and has always kind of followed my work sent me a note last night saying, "See, you don't think Max Scherzer is overrated or overpaid now, do you?" And I don't really take too much to heart when people kind of shoot a note at me on Twitter about something I've said. But I still look at this Max Scherzer deal for $43 million a year. And I cannot help but wonder if that money could be better spent by some of these Major League Baseball teams. Some of these pitcher contracts are just obscenely dumb. And I know people will say, well, I mean, Max Scherzer, he's one of the best pitchers in the game. Look at him last night. He didn't give up any runs. Kept his team in the game. And they lost. I can make the same argument about Gerrit Cole with the Yankees, who's making $1 zillion. Or Yu Darvish. Or any of these teams that have gone out and paid these exorbitant pitching contracts. Let's play this out. Let's think this over. Max Scherzer, $43 million this year for the Mets. If he's healthy, he plays once every fifth day, right? And even if he plays his position well, again, it's just a position. It's one spot on the field. Even if he plays his position well, like he did on Tuesday, his team could still lose, which they did, to a bad Reds team, 1-0. Think about that. He played well. Carried his team from a pitching standpoint. They lost. They lost. When you say it out loud, does it make sense to pay somebody $43 million to play, if healthy, which we'll get to in a second when it comes to Scherzer, once every fifth day? When even if they play well in that fifth day, you're still going to lose. A bat can carry you through multiple games, stretches. So the fact that Max Scherzer is the highest paid player in baseball at $43 million a year, does it make sense? No, it's absurd. It doesn't make sense. This year, if Max Scherzer stays healthy for the rest of the season, he will play one out of every seven games on average for the entire season. One out of every seven games on average. It's silly. Aaron Judge is going to play 140 games if he's healthy. Mike Trout's going to play 135, 140, 150 games. Same with Shohei Ohtani. Now, there's a guy that you can't pay enough money because of what he's able to do on the mound and in the field and at the plate. But paying a guy, think of it just from a business standpoint. Let's just talk business. I'm a business man. Think about it just from a business standpoint. The Yankees probably have more wins this year in starts from Hector Cortez. Hector Cortez. Nasty Nestor Cortez. I don't know why his name slipped my mind. I watch the Yankees regularly. That's what happens when you do a show and a podcast early in the morning. Think about how many wins the Yankees have in Nestor Cortez starts. He's probably making $1 million a year or less versus the 30-plus million that Gerrit Cole makes. Think about the value of Nestor Cortez versus the lack of value you get from a Gerrit Cole or a Jameson Taillon. Yeah, the Yankees lost with him on the mound last night. Or a Jordan Montgomery. Or a Luis Severino. I mean, the Yankees got five guys they could start in a game one of a playoff series. All right, maybe four, because Taillon, I don't think you'd start in a game one. But, I mean, they got three or four other guys that they could start, including Gerrit Cole, in a game one of a postseason. Only one of them makes $1 zillion. So why? Why do we do it? Why do teams do it? Why do they let themselves be held hostage to those big pitching dollars? I mean, the Mets are going to pay Max Scherzer for the next 3 years, $43 million. And in a good year, he's going to play in 33 out of 162 games. Now, some could make the argument. I'll argue against my own point here, because I am just a solo guy hosting a show, and I don't have a producer to chime in. But some could argue you're paying him that money for what he's going to do in the postseason. And even that gets crazy when you start thinking about, well, now you're just paying him because you want to have that guy starting in the postseason and you know how good he is. What if he bombs in his one start in the postseason? Oh, see Gerrit Cole last year against the Red Sox. I mean, it's insane that pitchers are valued and given the same kind of money that everyday position players get that are playing 140, 150 games a year. And again, I know it's this age-old argument, and you can... we could talk about why it matters or doesn't matter, and we can get into all that. It's fine. And maybe some will find this incredibly short-sighted of me to kind of talk about pitching this way. I think pitching is great. I was a pitcher when I played baseball in my high school days and the old sand pit in East Haven, Connecticut. I loved pitching. It's my favorite thing. But how we value it above hitting. I got news for you. On days where I wasn't pitching, a lot of times I was getting three innings because I wasn't a very good hitter. You know what attracts people to baseball? It's not 1-0 shutouts. I got news for you. I enjoy them. I appreciate them. But the kids love the bats. Chicks dig the long ball. You know who we're talking about every day? Aaron Judge. You know who we're talking about every day? Kyle Schwarber. Yordan Alvarez. We're not talking about Max Scherzer once every fifth day, because you know what? After his start last night, great start. Yay, we won't talk about you for another 5 days. We don't care. You know who we're talking about? You know who we're marketing? You know who you see in commercials? Otani, Judge, Alvarez, Bryce, Tatis, Acuna. We're not talking about pitchers. So why they're treated the same way, why they get the same money, if not more, it does not make sense to me. It doesn't add up. Not even a little. And that's no knock on Max Scherzer or Jacob deGrom, who might pitch someday again for the Mets. Oh, Met fans are going to love me. I mean, someday you'll see DeGrom, don't worry. Oh, he had 5 strikeouts against 6 batters in his rehab start. Then he'll come back and pitch 2 games, and then he'll be back on the disabled list again. How much money are they paying DeGrom? Hey, Google, how much does Jacob DeGrom make this year? $33 million for Jacob DeGrom. Can you imagine writing those checks if you're Steve Cohen? Think about that for a second. I know, nobody's going to feel bad for a billionaire owner. But imagine for a moment being Steve Cohen and writing those checks. Let's assume that DeGrom chooses the route of getting paid only during the season. I mean, what's it, like $1 million a week during the season for him? And he's not even on the field. It's got, I mean, I don't care how much money you're worth, how much money you make. I know people will say, nah, to them it's chump change. There ain't nothing that could feel good about writing a check for $1 million large. For $1 million. Every week for a guy that can't even get on the field. There's no way that could be fun. All right, stick around. I got more to get to. We'll hear from Billy Horschel, Tiger Woods. Golfers saying things. Oh, I didn't talk about Kevin Durant yet either. What a joke. I'll get to that too. Stay with us. All right, good to have you with us on this Wednesday edition. Don't mind me, I'm Jason Page. If you miss anything from the show, you can, not watching live, you can check out the podcast courtesy of our friends at Believe if you're already listening. Make sure to subscribe. It's all sorts of good fun. The Don't Mind Me podcast, courtesy of Believe. That's B-L-E-A-V. And while you're over there, check out the huge number of podcasts they have. If you're a sports fan, you really don't need to go anywhere else. Terrific content all the time. Tiger Woods was talking yesterday. We'll get to that in a moment. But listen to PGA Tour pro Billy Horschel, who's playing in the Scottish Open this week, going off. And he's been one of these guys that stayed relatively quiet throughout the whole PGA Tour guys defecting for LIV Golf. Well, Billy Horschel could stay quiet no longer. And take a listen to the comments he made yesterday during a press conference going after some of the guys that used to be his fellow tour professionals.
The guys that are hypocrites, that aren't telling the truth, that are lying about some things, that I can't stand to sit here anymore and be diplomatic about it, as I have been in the past. I don't fault anyone for going to play the LIV Tour. I don't have any ill will for anyone going to play the LIV Tour. I have ill will towards the comments that they've made. Comments saying that Jay Monahan doesn't listen to the PGA Tour. The PGA Tour doesn't listen to us. Jay Monahan and everyone at headquarters is the PGA Tour. They work tirelessly for us to reap the financial rewards and have all the opportunities we have. At the same time, I am one of 200 plus members of the PGA Tour. I am the PGA Tour, just as two other 100 members of PGA Tour. So when you're taking shots at the PGA Tour, you're taking, and Jay Monahan, you're just not taking shots at them, you're taking shots at us. And to say that they don't listen is a complete farce. It really is. They can't listen. If they listen to everything every 200 plus players on the PGA Tour said, our tour would be a complete mess. We wouldn't even have a tour. And so it's ridiculous to hear some of these comments some of these guys made saying, well, you know, this allows me to play less tournaments. I've played 30, 35 weeks a year. No one's forced you to play that many events. The PGA Tour says 15 events minimum. All you have to do is play 15 events. If you keep your card in those 15 events, then that's fine. You don't have to play. If you want to play better or you want to play more so you get a chance to win the FedEx Cup, so be it. So be it. No one's made you play that first playoff event to go to miss family obligations. No one has. We're independent contractors. We do sign a contract with the PGA Tour that requires us to meet certain requirements of the PGA Tour. But we have the opportunity to make our schedule. So to say that we have to play X amount of events and they don't have time off, no one makes you. I'm on the road for 5 weeks. I've not seen my family for 3 weeks. I haven't seen them for 3 weeks. The last 3 weeks wasn't at the U.S. Open. Didn't see them in Germany. I stayed over here for London for a week. I'm not seeing them this week. I'm not seeing them that week for next week. So 5 weeks. But that is that's what my wife and I decided. That's what, when we laid our schedule out, it just worked that way. I made that decision to not see my wife and kids for 5 weeks. Am I crying about it? No. I understand. I'm living my dream, trying to play golf professionally and support my family financially. And so I'm just tired of these comments. Like, go play your LIV Tour and forget about the PGA Tour. You didn't want to support the PGA Tour going forward. Don't tell me you're going to play LIV when they go to 14 events and then go play 15 events on a PGA Tour and play in 29. That's not a smaller schedule. You're not playing less.
I mean, Billy Horschel just summed it up. These guys are all talking about wanting to play the PGA Tour and the LIV Tour. They want their cake and eat it too. They want to talk about, well, I want to play less events. But I want to play. And now all of them are going to see the prize purses go up, this 8-event sort of super mini event that the PGA Tour is doing. Now they're like, well, man, why don't we get some of that LIV money and go play those events? You can't do it. Nobody's forcing you to play 40 events a year. If you want those FedEx Cup points, if making that matters to you so much, then go play it. Otherwise, shut up. Nobody is forcing you. Like he said, these guys are independent contractors. They are not forced to do anything that they don't want to do. Yeah, if you're playing in a PGA Tour event, are there certain requirements? Of course there are. But at the end of the day, if, Phil Mickelson wants to play 10 events, he can play 10 events. Look, Tiger Woods doesn't play any events. And then I think the best case scenario, Tiger will play 5 events. Now you could argue Tiger's got more money than God. He doesn't have to. Fine. But I have zero issue. Zero whatsoever. And Billy Horschel's even saying, I don't care if you play the LIV Tour, but be honest about it. Say you're playing for the money. Don't talk about all this other junk. Good for Billy Horschel. But there are guys, I mean, look, the Scottish Open is this week. A number of guys threatened legal action, and now they're being allowed to play in the Scottish Open this week. And these are guys that have been bashing the PGA Tour, the DP Tour, which is essentially the European Tour, which is now in cahoots and in bed with PGA Tour. They're going to be much more closely aligned. Can you imagine the friction in those clubhouses at these events when you got the LIV Golf guys and the PGA Tour guys getting together? There's already plenty of animosity, guys that don't like each other for various reasons on the golf course. Play too slow, cheaters, whatever. But it's about to get really ugly when you start to mix these LIV guys with the PGA Tour. And look, there's going to be more PGA defections to the LIV Tour. That kind of money is life-changing money for some of these guys. They're going to jump ship. You're already seeing the younger players do it. And at some point, LIV's going to get a TV deal. I don't know who it's going to be from. I don't know, you know, who's going to be the unwise soul that says we're going to take that Saudi money and put LIV on our airwaves. Somebody's going to do it. Inevitably, somebody's going to do it. And it's going to take it to a whole nother level. I watch, like all of you, I watch SportsCenter. And I see what they're doing in terms of covering it. You get some of the commentary from some of the SportsCenter anchors. It's kind of interesting. It's supposed to be a sports news show. You've got them openly saying these guys are out there just for the money. But they're still showing the highlights. And in some cases, showing it before the PGA Tour event highlights. But none of these guys playing LIV Golf are going to get world golf point ranking, you know, ranking points, all that stuff. So they're just going to see their ranking continue to drop. They may or may not be able to play in the majors. It's not going to be pretty. And the legal battle is coming. You can count on that. Tiger Woods spoke yesterday at the Pro-Am he's playing in Ireland, I believe. That's his prep event for the British Open. Because he's not playing any events other than the majors. And Tiger just came flat out and said it. He said, I didn't play the U.S. Open because I wanted to play the British. I was going to play you a clip of Tiger, but it's really essentially just him saying he skipped the U.S. Open because this is a historic British Open, and he wanted to be at the top of his game wherever that top is. He wanted to be at the top of his game in order to, you know, be able to give it one last go at St. Andrews. Do we have British Open? Do I have British Open odds? Let's see. British Open odds to win right now. I'm curious to see where Tiger is in that number. Rory McIlroy right now is the favorite at plus 800. John Rahm at plus 1200. Scottie Scheffler at plus 1200. Scrolling down the list to find Tiger Woods. Eldrick Tiger Woods, where are you? Wow. Is he that far down the list? Where is Tiger? I don't see him. I'll have to put him in the finder here and see where he is. Oh, Tiger is plus 4,100. So he's kind of middle of the pack. He's about 20 names down the list. Again, meaning if you wagered $100 on Tiger Woods to win the British Open, you would win $4,100. Again, if I'm going to take a flyer on anybody, I'm going to take a flyer on the guy who's won more majors than anybody in this generation. Can he put four magical rounds together? Who knows? It's a flat course. He doesn't have to worry about the hills and the undulations, although it is wet and soupy. Humidity, you got to wonder about how that stuff gets into your joints if you're Tiger Woods with the problems he's had. He's just, look, from here on in, it's just hoping he can put four rounds together, stay healthy enough, and find a way to win something. And I don't even know for him if it's about that at this point. He'll say it. He'll probably say that it isn't. But knowing how competitive Tiger Woods is, of course it is. All right, that's it on golf. Some thoughts on Kevin Durant. We'll do that next as we continue. I'm Jason Page. Don't mind me. We welcome you back. Don't mind me. If you like the show, give us a like on YouTube. If you feel the need, subscribe to our Decibel 88 YouTube channel. You can also subscribe to the podcast. We're on every major podcasting platform. If you're listening to us there, I am grateful for you doing so. Thanks to our friends at Believe, B-L-E-A-V, for all of your podcasting needs, especially in the sports realm. Go and check them out. Latest odds on Kevin Durant and where he will land for next season. What are the latest odds on Kevin Durant and where he will land next season? From what I could see, it's the Phoenix Suns at plus 190. Then the Miami Heat at plus 450. The Nets, where he currently is, at plus 550. The Raptors at plus 550. The Lakers at plus 900. Where are the Knicks? You mean the Knicks aren't going to be able to land Kevin Durant? I guess not. So, I've been thinking long and hard about this. Kevin Durant, the Kyrie Irving situation, both of them are going to be on the move. And in the instance of Kevin Durant, you know, you think about where the organization is right now, where the Nets are, and where whatever team that's going to get him is, you know, it's probably going to be a team that's a contender or somebody that wants to contend in 2022, 2023. And you're able to get him for a few years because he's still under contract. But that takes making a deal more complicated, obviously, because you got to have the assets to move to be able to get that contract to fit in your under your salary cap. But it's such a gamble. And because you think about Kevin Durant's career, Oklahoma City didn't win. Goes and joins a stacked Warriors roster, wins. Goes to try and do it on his own and build his own super team in Brooklyn, it fails. And now the Nets are going to pay the price. They didn't win while he was there. Thank you, James Harden and Kyrie Irving as well. And now they're going to have to go into rebuild mode. They're going to have to tear that whole thing apart. Which means New York basketball is not going to be very good because the Knicks are still kind of trying to figure it out. I love the Jalen Brunson signing, but let's be honest, the Knicks are still trying to figure it out. The Nets are going to be abysmal for the next probably 5 years. And whatever team goes and gets Kevin Durant and decides to try and make a championship run with him, and gives up all the assets they're going to have to give up, draft picks. If you don't win a title with Durant, you're not just punished. It's not just punitive in the sense that you didn't win a title with him. But you gave up all those draft picks, which means you're mortgaging the future you could have had you decided to build it in a more traditional way. And now, you're talking about 5, 6, 7 years out in the NBA wilderness without being able to win. So it's not just a, hey, do we make a run at it for the next 2 or 3 years decision when it comes to Kevin Durant. It's a, we're trying to make a run at it. Because again, you're going to lose him in free agency in 3 years anyway. Maybe you can trade him in the final year if the first 2 years don't work out the way you hoped. But it's a huge mortgage. It's a huge nut to pay. Not just now, but for the next 5 or 6 years of your franchise. And the Kyrie Irving thing is just, you know, Kyrie signed back in to play with the Nets this year. because nobody else wanted him. Couldn't work out a sign and trade or any of that stuff. And they could still potentially work out a deal. Maybe he winds up with the Lakers. If LeBron wants that headache again, knock yourself out. This isn't the same Kyrie Irving he played with in Cleveland with the Cavaliers. This is not the same guy. Definitely in a much different headspace. But do you take that gamble? If you're a general manager, it's the kind of decision that, you know, guys keep their jobs or lose their jobs as a result of. Somebody may lose their job as a result of a decision to go after Kyrie Irving or Kevin Durant. All right, that's where we leave it for this Wednesday edition of Don't Mind Me, this July 6th, 2022. Thanks for hanging out with us. With you Monday through Thursday. It's a holiday week, so we weren't on Monday and Tuesday this week. Back with you on Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern, live on YouTube. Always available via podcast, courtesy of Believe, your favorite podcasting platform. Go and subscribe now. Stay cool wherever you are. Stay safe. Catch you back here on Thursday. I'll see you.